pleasure to be here. And as David said, I like to be very practical. And just to clarify, so we don't get confusion, I'm a doctor, professor doctor, not a physician. Okay, so some people have already asking me for some medical advice. Okay, and I'm not going to give any medical advice. I'm just a health educator. All right? And if you can apply it to your medical life, that'd be great. So what I'd like to do is you're going to find that I do not stay behind a podium. I'm used to being in front of a classroom or beside a classroom or somewhere like that. And I'm going to try to get acquainted with you a little bit and try to be interactive. And I jokingly told David that I am a sleep specialist, that I can put people to sleep in that sense. But I want to interact with you because I know you've been laying around maybe now and had a large meal. And so we're going to talk about synchronized living, but I'd like to open up with a slide. Does anybody recognize this gentleman? 1992, is he looking a little bit familiar? He was in his opening line of a nationally televised debate. What did he say? Who am I and why am I here? Do you remember him now? Ross Perot's running mate in 1992. He was a vice presidential candidate. He said, who am I and why am I here? He was debating Al Gore and Dan Quayle for the VP, right? Well, check out his middle name. He's actually James Bond. James Bond Stockdale. And he was actually a prisoner of war in Vietnam. But he came out and he opened up with that. So I want to get acquainted with you and to let you know where I'm coming from, because when you see somebody new, which most of us aren't acquainted with each other here, are we? You don't know me, I don't know you. So I'd like to get a little bit acquainted, give you my background. I think I have a strange accent, at least I've been told that. Part of that reason is because I come from right there. That's where I was born and raised. Now, some of you know about Grand Forks, British Columbia, right? Isn't there a Grand Forks, British Columbia, where Light Bearers used to be located near? I'm actually from the other Grand Forks, North Dakota, so some people joke about I have an accent. Is it coming through? A little bit? Talk about Ole and Lena, stuff like that. We're not going to talk about that. Well, I grew up in North Dakota, and I grew up right in town, but I had grandparents that lived outside of town, so I had a nice balance between the city life and the country life. I did not grow up in an Adventist home. And I grew up hunting and fishing and playing all kinds of sports, mainly hockey. And that's part of my malady. I probably have some of those brain things that they're talking about with football players now. And I grew up pretty much a typical Midwestern kid, and I didn't know much about health, and I went off to play college. And then they told me I had to take classes to stay eligible in college. You have to actually go to class to stay eligible to play hockey. So I did that, and I took a nutrition class. And I've been on this fast track since about 1983 when I first started studying health. So I picked up a bachelor's degree in nutrition, and I'm a registered dietitian. That's the medical side of it that I have tied to medical centers and things like that. And then I went on and got a master's degree in health education, and then did a doctoral studies in public health. Currently, I'm located in Flagstaff, Arizona with my wife, and teaching in the public health department, or in the health sciences department, teaching a lot of public health classes. But I'd like to get into the topic tonight. And before we do that, the funny thing is how many of you are really into health and you actually do some health education in your churches or in your community? Wow. So hopefully, what I'm going to do is I'm going to post the PDF form of all these slides so you're not trying to copy down pictures and stuff like that. I have a website, and it's not a commercial website. Don't go there and go, who's this guy? It's not a commercial website. I just park documents there. It's called fullcircleofwellness.com. And it's on your booklet there on page 28, is it? Page 28? Okay. Page 28. There's my website. It's not a commercial website. And in fact, the guy that does this for me puts my documents on there. He's out of town right now, so it might be a few days before I get these up there, and then you can look at them. I'll share materials if you want. Other things, you can just email me. I like to give away the information. I'm not real protective of the stuff, okay? So, but the more and more we study the human body, doesn't this ring true? For how you have formed me in my inward parts. You have covered me in my mother's womb. And here we have a picture of a surgery, a spina bifida baby, pre-birth, being operated on here in the womb. Isn't that interesting? And it says, you form me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. That is my keynote scripture in my life, in my teaching. And so as we look at this, my goal and my focus is to try to help you in your personal life and then to share that with others. That's my life pursuit. And really, to get to our goals, and I think the missing link right there, a lot of times in our goals, is this thing we call the health message. Okay? And a lot of us think the health message is what we eat and if we exercise or not and drink water. Right? That is so shallow. In fact, I was a Seventh-day Adventist already for 2 years before I even knew there was, quote, a health message. You know that? I was studying nutrition in school, and I would go to this prayer meeting. I was in college when I became a Seventh-day Adventist Christian. I became a Christian my first year of college, and about my second or third year, I lose count of how many years I was in college, figuring things out with hockey and getting hit in the head and stuff. And so what happened was, I was going to prayer meeting. I was invited to an Adventist church by a coworker, and so I started going to everything. Prayer meeting and all that. And one night at a prayer meeting, the pastor's wife gets up there and starts talking about health. And I'm like, what? This is a prayer meeting, right? What is she doing? Is she on a health kick? She looks like she needs some health. But I mean, I didn't get it. Seriously, I didn't get it because she didn't look healthy. And I didn't, you know, and I'll go to the potlucks and there was, you know, 3 inches of cheese layered on everything. And people look real gaunt. And I'm thinking, wow, this is really interesting. And so, you know, I was into the church for about 2 years, and then somebody at prayer meeting says, you know, pastor wants to take a break on what we're doing. We're reading the Great Controversy. He says, they want you to do something on health. And so then I'd remember something about, and I really didn't know much about Ellen White at the time either, and somebody had tried to give me a counsels on diet and foods. And when they asked me to speak during prayer meeting, I said, I better go get that book back that I didn't read, right? And it revolutionized my life, totally changed my life. Back in 1989, totally changed my life, turned it upside down, and I went to the church and said, I have to confess, I was going to give you my, you know, shoot from the hip stuff, but I'm going to change it and I'm going to give you this. And I've been living it ever since, and it's phenomenal. I just love it. So the goal, my goal and my focus really is what Tom Landry used to talk about with his football players at the Dallas Cowboys. He says, my goal is to try to get people, getting someone to do what they don't want to do, okay, to achieve what they want to achieve. He was talking to football players who wanted to win the Super Bowl, who didn't want to show up for two-a-day practices and lift weights and go to bed early and do all those things. That's like us, okay? There's a lot of things that we don't want to do, okay, but we want to achieve these things over here, but we have to do these things to get to the other side. So I'm going to try to help you get through those things. Or let's put it this way, so you can help other people do this, okay? We've got this figured out, right? Okay, so the thing about it is change, you know, change was the mantra in 2008 during the election cycle, right? It's still the mantra, I think. We voted for change, but most of the time we're voting that somebody else will change, right? Or somebody else will do the changing to help us out, right? And so the third presentation in this series, we're going to talk about how we actually change habits. But tonight we're going to look at my mantra is how can we cooperate? Okay? This is what I think. I think the Lord has designed us to operate a specific way. Our bodies to run in a specific way. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, yellow, red, whatever you are, male, female, what part of the country you come from. Our bodies are all pretty much designed exactly the same. I know we're living in a time where everybody wants to be individualized and be treated differently and so forth, but you know what? There's a specific way the body was intended to operate. And I'm going to try to teach you how we can cooperate with the way we were intended to operate, and then we have the result is good health. So many times we go after things, we want to lose weight. So we focus on losing weight. We want to lower our cholesterol, so we focus on lowering our cholesterol. We want to drop our blood pressure, so we focus on that stuff. But if you'd step back and just start cooperating in your lifestyle with the way you were intended to operate, suddenly your blood pressure drops, your cholesterol drops, your weight drops, things that need to go up, and the things that need to go down. Does that make sense? But we're always focusing on these numbers and what my number is and checking our blood sugars and checking our blood pressure. If we start cooperating with the way the body was intended to operate, not forcing it to operate the way we want it to operate. Okay, so that's basically, in a nutshell, what I'm all about. So how can we do that? So the first thing we need to look at, this idea I called synchronized living. So let's look at some terms. First thing, what does synchronization mean? Working together, just like these swimmers, right? Synchronized swimming, right? That type of thing. That's the way the body is intended to operate, to synchronize the organs in the body. Okay, so we're looking at its timekeeping, which requires the coordination of events to operate a system in unison. Is your body right now synchronized? How many of you are in a different time zone right now than you're normally in? Anybody? What time zone are you normally in? You're 9 hours off from where you live. Are you synchronized right now? You acclimated, okay? Think about it. When's the last time you felt in sync? Are you in sync right now? You're not. Okay, let's see if we can get you synchronized. All right. The next thing we look at, I'm going to need some water. Do we have any? I'm kind of getting, yeah. Okay. Systems operating. Super. Thank you. Appreciate it. Systems operating with all their parts in synchrony are said to be synchronous or in sync. So, what does that mean to you? Give me a word that you think of when you hear this being in sync. Synchronized. Harmony. Anything else? Rhythm. In rhythm. Okay? Let's think about that. That's what I want going through your mind right now. How can we get in rhythm with the way the body was intended to operate? Not forcing it to function in a way that it was never intended to operate. We do that a lot. You know what we do? We know what we do totally. What do we normally do when we get fatigued? As Americans, not us. Take a stimulant. Okay? Was the body meant to be stimulated by these chemicals? That's not synchronizing. Okay? That's rather asynchrony. Okay? And the general meaning is a state of being not being synchronized, out of harmony, not in tune. Okay? Could we carry this over to our relationships? Yes. Synchronizing our relationships. Okay? Think about that. So the question is, which category did you generally fall into? Generally. Okay, now think about our neighbors and our friends. How are they doing? How is the world right now doing? Is the world in synchrony? No. Asynchrony. All right, so 24-7. We're living in a 24-7. We hear this all the time, right? 24-7, I want it now. I want it overnight. We're on this fast-paced society. 24-7, 365. Do you agree with me? That's basically how we're functioning. We're on this high-speed, fast-paced. The interesting thing is when we start picking up, how many of you have Facebook accounts? Had a Facebook. Okay, how many are on Twitter? Okay, Twitter. Now, when you start adding these things, do you automatically say, okay, something has to go on my schedule now. I'm adding Facebook, and I'm adding a Facebook page. I'm now going to start spending 3 hours a week with Facebook. I got to take 3 hours out and put it somewhere else. What do we start doing? We start cutting away at typically what? Sleep. We either go to bed later or get up earlier. That's the way we try to synchronize in America. We're trying to fit more in to the same amount of time, and we're not taking anything out. We're just adding stuff. We just add it in. So we go to bed late, or get up early, or do... You can't poke your neighbor when I'm talking. No poking. No poking. No poking, okay? Because we can't criticize anybody else in here, okay? Because we're all guilty of this in some way, shape, or form, right? Sorry about that. I picked this. He was pointing at and poking him, okay? Okay, so what I'm concerned about is what is it doing to our health, and then ultimately, what is it doing to us spiritually as well? Because, you know, the interesting thing is we love to, as Americans, we're what we call reductionists. Have you ever noticed that? We cut things out and we put them over here. This is my spiritual life, and this is my physical life, right? And this is my relational life. We live in these little boxes, right? Had my devotional, check, right? What's that? Yeah, we compartmentalize our lives. And so we think, oh, the spiritual thing, oh, I'm so spiritual. And then over here, you're going to bed late, getting up early, putting all this stuff. You know what I mean? We're not balanced. We're totally unbalanced. We're schizophrenic, really. We are. When you think about it, if you look at your schedule right now, right? I'm glad you came. Now, some of you people that are retired have got it figured out, right? How many of you are retired? And you come here. You guys have it figured out now, right? The schedule slows down. You can do those long studies. You can really do those things. You can do outreach in your community. What was that?
Are you kidding?
You guys are jamming more into your lives, too. You guys are learning the computer. You got grandkids. You're doing visiting. You're doing all this stuff. So how can we do this? Look at this. The 24/7 society is in direct what? Opposition to how we're designed. And this is secular scientists telling us this. These are not theologians. Okay? Isn't that interesting? We have to be reminded by NASA sleep researchers that we're totally out of control. Like if we didn't know that, right? So, there's a whole field of study. How many have heard of this chronobiology? It's really growing right now. And it's actually, they're getting down to the point now where people that take medications, that the different times a day that you take your medication may determine how well you absorb it. Okay? And they're telling you the different times of days that you could be taking medication, you might be cutting back on your medications and things like that. Chronobiology is basically a study of science to look at how the body is operating internally. It's exploding. This whole field of study is exploding right now. So chronobiology is basically pertains to time in the study of science or life. Chronobiology. Now, the bedrock of chronobiology happens to be the circadian rhythm. You've all heard that, right? You've heard of the circadian rhythms, right? Okay? The idea behind circadian rhythms is circa means around, okay? And 80, and that's about 24 hours. The body is designed to run on basically about a 24-hour internal clock, biological clock. We used to think that women were the only ones that had biological clocks that ticked. You know that? Because it was the baby thing. You know, they can only have them till menopause. We're finding out that all human beings and a lot of platform and a lot of animals actually have circadian rhythms internally, cellularly. And it's interesting, too. And it's not, you know, the interesting thing in America is that we're so Western medicine society. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you start looking at some of the Eastern medicine types of philosophy where they take the whole being into consideration, they actually believe that each organ in the body has an internal circadian rhythm within it. There's different times of day that you digest food better. There's different times of day where you eliminate food better. And there's different things that the whole body not only has a big 24-hour circadian rhythm, but internally, each cell and each organ in the body is actually running on a 24-hour cycle, around 24 hours. So this is what I want to kind of focus on is the circadian rhythms. How can we get in harmony with the way the circadian rhythms in the body are operating? Because it's going to make a world of difference in how we operate. Now this, you might not be able to see this really super well. I'm sorry for that, but basically I'll give you these slides online and you can look at this. And this is from a website, from a book called The Body Clock Guide to Better Health. Excellent book. So really, when you start looking at what's going on in the body, this is the way the body's going to operate, and it's dependent upon a dark and light cycle. When the sun comes up and when the sun goes down indicates a lot about the rhythms of the body, and the rhythms, really, if you want to get technical about it, the rhythms of the earth. Okay? Now, we live about 23 miles from Sedona, Arizona. Anybody ever been to Sedona? What goes on in Sedona? There's supposed to be all these vortexes that come together and things like that. I'm not going there, okay? That's when I talk about the rhythms of the body and the rhythms of the earth. It's not the philosophy that takes you off in left field. This is true documented stuff that's actually going on and was set in motion at creation. And I'm going to show you some of the things later, how that validates that. But when you think about it, think about, say you got up at 6 o'clock, 6 a.m., 0600 for some of you, right? 600, and basically what happens is your blood pressure is starting to rise a little bit. You start releasing a hormone in your body called cortisol. You've heard of cortisol? It's usually a stress hormone, okay? But the body, in a sense, it's an alarm clock. It's an internal alarm clock that's saying, you know what, get out of bed. You should be getting up right now because I suspect you went to bed soon after sundown last night, so it's time to get up right now, okay? And this alarm clock doesn't really have a snooze button on it, okay? It's coming. A little bit of cortisol, your blood pressure starts to go up. This thing called melatonin, how many of you heard of melatonin before? Okay, that's the thing that puts you to sleep, okay? It's a hormone in the body, okay? And the interesting thing is we start waking up. The body internally is telling you to get up. It has an internal alarm clock. Now, it's interesting in teenagers, we can turn that off. Did you know that? And we can sleep right by that, okay? But as we get going, now some of you, okay, as we get older, the alarm clock starts going off over here, doesn't it? Okay, so at 6 o'clock, somewhere in there, around there, our circadian rhythms, look at this, and then our bowels start kicking in. What's our body been doing all night long? It's been filtering our blood, okay? And the liver's been taking all these toxins and all these metabolites, and they're taking out, they're putting in the bile and throwing it in the tube that's going to go out of the body, okay? So the body wants to get the toxins out because it's been filtering the blood all night. You've been sleeping, it's been working, okay? And then we see that the highest testosterone secretion begins at about 9, so go hit the weights about 9, okay? And then you're most alert about 10 a.m., okay? So that's when you want to do your shopping. You want to go grocery shopping about 10 a.m. when you're really alert looking for the sales, right? So you're alert. And then at about noon, then you go over here. Then your coordination time begins right over here around, what is that, 3:30? 2:30. 2:30, so you add 2 hours to 12, you get 2:30. Best coordination. So you know what? A lot of athletes, they actually practice right over in here. Their best coordination time. Fastest reaction time. Greatest cardiovascular efficiency. Then you go over to here, highest blood pressure, highest body temperature, and then what happens here? Sun's going down, melatonin's starting to be secreted in the brain to start putting you to sleep. So you start nodding off, but typically what do we start doing right over in here? We start doing some stimulants. We're turning on lights, we're turning on music, we're doing stuff to stimulate us to keep us awake. And the body's trying to go to sleep. You notice that? And then we go over here and then melatonin secretion starts. And then over here, you know what's really nice is the body says, you know what? Bowel movements are suppressed. So the body, some of the functions of the body start shutting down and we start going into a sleep. And then we get into our deepest sleep from about midnight to about 3 a.m. That's a deepest sleep. Okay? That's a typical ideal circadian rhythm across the board. Now, not everybody in here is going to be on that chart. That's a sad thing, right? We're all a little bit different. But that's internally roughly how the body runs. Now, if you live in Alaska and you have 23 hours of daylight and these different things, it really messes things up. We'll get into some tips here. Okay, so when we start looking at this, the overall picture of this is circadian rhythms in the body. During the day, the body temperature is going up, cortisol hormones are going up, and the blood pressure is going. This is all meant to kind of help us get things done. At the nighttime, those things are going down. But while those things are going down, okay, and we have melatonin and growth hormone and testosterone, prolactin hormones going up during the nighttime. The body is repairing itself, and that's what melatonin is all about. That's what growth hormone, testosterone, is repairing the body while we're sleeping. And that's why it's important to get that deep sleep. And so we see that the day and the night are regulating the circadian rhythms of the body. And that's what I'm talking about being in synchrony, being synchronized to this cycle right here, okay? Where during the day, we're awake and alert and we're going. And then at night, we're shutting down and the body's rebuilding itself. Okay, so let's look at our daily patterns. What can we do to get in sync with our circadian rhythms and so we can get the greatest recovery every night we sleep so our body can rebuild itself? This has a lot to do with how much we age. How fast we age is right here. Okay, because what we've seen now was shift workers, people that work shift where they switch around a lot, and they're working the day shift, and they're working the night shift, and they're working the afternoon. That is the biggest predictor of how long you're going to live as far as circadian rhythms. Lifespan is shortened when you're on shift work. What would be ideal is, even if you're going to work the night shift, would be to lock in to a shift if you can. And then I could share with you what you want to do is you want to simulate the night when you're sleeping during the day. And those types of things. Okay, so let's look, how can we get our daily patterns to be very practical? What can we do in our daily lives so we can synchronize with the way we're designed to operate? Because when we get in harmony with the way we're meant to operate internally, we're going to have fantastic health, we're going to have greater longevity, we don't have to worry about the cholesterol and the blood pressure and all that. They're going to normalize when we're in sync with these circadian rhythms in the body. So let's take a look at it. The air traffic controller, I'm going to use that term right now, the air traffic controller in the body for this circadian rhythm is a real, it's a $50 word. Can you pronounce it? Suprachiasmatic nucleus. Okay? Big deal. SCN. Basically, what it is just a little control center right here in the middle of the brain. Okay? And it's controlled by the light and dark cycle that regulates the hormones in the body depending upon how much light is let in and how much darkness. Okay, so that's the control center. That's the air traffic controller. That's the conductor of the orchestra, if you will. Okay, they're leading the band. This little gland right here in the middle of the brain, right by the pituitary gland. Okay, it's set the 24-hour cycle, the sleep-wake cycle. So why do we need to sleep? Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb, thought sleeping was a waste of human potential. When you study his life, you know what he was? A chronic napper. He would nap several times a day and not sleep at night. Okay? I'm not sure. We should study how his lifespan was and how his blood pressure and things were locked in. But anyway, what we're looking at here is, why do we need to sleep? First of all, what it does, it regulates our hormones. It takes the cortisol levels down, okay? And it helps us when we're sleeping, we're releasing testosterone, even ladies, that rebuilds the body, okay, rejuvenates the body. And it slows the aging process. I know we're in America right now, we're totally hooked on this whole aging process, extending our lives. And I think we should. We should have abundant life as long as we can. It boosts the immune system. What do you think mono and all these things are basically, what do they tell you to do? Go home and what? Sleep, get some rest. A lot of the ailments we have in America, basically when you go home and get some sleep, it's probably a lot better than the drugs they gave you to try to combat the illness. Just go home and get some sleep. So improve brain function, reduce cortisol levels. Those are all the reasons that we need sleep, good, deep sleep. So when we look at it, think about how much sleep you're getting. How much do you get right now? How much sleep? How many get about 5 to 6 hours? Good 5 to 6? How about 6 to 7? And about 7 to 8? Right in there? Okay? More than 8. How many are getting more than 8 hours of sleep a night? Okay? More than 9? So everybody's below the 9 level, it looks like, but above the 5. Okay? But we want to look at not only length of sleep, but quality of sleep. Look at newborns, 12 to 18, infants, toddlers, preschoolers, school-age children, teens, and adults. Okay? Teens do need more sleep. In fact, there's some studies now that if they're starting schools later to let the teens sleep a little bit longer, and they actually have better grades and better performance and better health. Okay? I think there's something to do with going to bed with your iPhone and all that stuff, too. That's really messing some of this up. Some of these distractions at night. So, 7 to 9. It's the same benefits anywhere in the 7 to 9. Everybody's a little bit different on how much sleep they need. Okay? But the interesting thing is that the same problems that we have with less than 7 start occurring if you have more than 9. High blood pressure, high cholesterol levels, obesity, all those things, less than 7 and more than 9. That's like a target that we're finding right now is between 7 to 9. But we're going to look at quality of sleep here in a second too. But check this out. Sleeping in America, 1910, the average American slept 9 hours a night. What was going on in 1910? Not much. Didn't have a lot of lights, didn't have a lot of mechanization, didn't have CNN and ESPN, right? So we got more sleep. We had candles and things like that, weren't bright lights. By 2005, 6.8, and just the latest studies that I've been reading, 2011, we're averaging about 6.7 hours a day or a night in a 24-hour cycle of sleep. On weekends, we're getting about 7.5. How many of you change your cycle on weekends as opposed to during the week? Do you change that a little bit? More sleep? Sleep in later or go to bed earlier? A little bit of both, okay? So there's our average. Now, again, we look at Thomas Edison, and he was actually the inventor of the light bulb and the 24-hour shift. Because of him, we have 24-hour warehouses and different operations going on, and some people blame him for some of the lower rate of how much sleep we're getting. So what we're going to look at now is some of the studies. What happens when you sleep less than 6 hours a night? Look at this study here. It's done over in Europe, and they found that 30% of workers reported short sleep duration, less than 6 hours per day. 30% of the working force is getting less than 6 hours of sleep. Think about that. And night shift had a much higher prevalence, and a higher prevalence in the manufacturing, transportation, and healthcare and social assistance industries. Any of you access those industries? Okay, are you driving next to semis on the highway? A lot of them are under 6 hours a night. Okay, nursing homes, nurses. How many of you are working in healthcare? A lot of people in healthcare are getting less than 6 hours a night, and they're ministering meds and doing life procedures on people, those types of things. So do you think we have a sleep issue in America? Okay. So the average American has 338 hours of sleep debt. Now, if you were 338-something in debt financially, would that be good or bad? Okay. Think about this. Now, your sleep, 338 hours in debt with your sleep. And not some of this can be made up, but not all of it. You can't pay it all back, okay, because the damage is sometimes irreversible. But when we have a sleep debt, which affects over two-thirds of the adults, we have increased in several diseases, including type 2 diabetes. Do we have much type 2 diabetes going on in the United States? Cardiovascular, stroke. The risk of a stroke was up 400% when you have this kind of sleep debt, even in healthy individuals. People that have no other symptoms, a 400% increase in a stroke, okay, risk, if you have a sleep debt of this level, okay? Hypertension, accidents, look at lower grades. That's my, a lot of my students wonder, they email me at the end of the semester and they say, how do I get a better grade? I go to bed earlier. That's not what they want to hear, okay? So we start looking at these things in the sleep debt. So what I like to do, if we had a smaller group, what I do is I usually bring a backpack with bricks. Okay, maybe you can visualize this and feel this. Pretend you're putting on an empty backpack right now. Okay, you got a good night's sleep. That's the empty backpack. It's light. But every hour that goes by, I put a brick in your backpack. Okay? And then at the end of the day, you have 12, 14, 15 bricks in your backpack. Right? Now, you go to bed and you get a good night's sleep, they all come out. But if you go to bed and your dog barks, okay, and your spouse is snoring, okay, and you get up in the morning, you know, you still have 5 or 6 bricks in your backpack. Okay, now you do that over time, you have 338 bricks in your backpack. That's the average American right now. Walking around, and you're driving by them 65, 70 miles an hour, 3 or 4 feet apart on the highway. Scary, isn't it? That's what we're doing. And then we're texting while we're doing that. And on the cell phone, we've got issues. Okay, so how can we reverse this? I'm trying to get to the point where we can actually turn it around. I want to skip over some of this stuff, but I have to share it with you, okay? Moderate sleep deprivation produces impairments in cognitive and motor performance equivalent to legally prescribed level of alcohol intoxication. Okay, check this out, study. Sleep deprivation, sleeping less than 6 hours, one night, can have some of the same hazardous effects as being legally drunk behind the wheel. And we're talking about coordination, reaction time, and your judgment. Sleep deprivation. They've done the studies, okay? Those driving after being awake for 17 to 19 hours, which we do a lot, right? Okay, perform worse than those with a blood alcohol level of 0.05%. Now, Oregon is 0.08 to be legally drunk, so you're almost just slightly buzzed. Okay, so sleep deprivation has the same type of effect of being intoxicated, and think about putting people behind the wheel that are in that condition. I'm not trying to scare anybody. This is just kind of reality stuff. Okay, this is what we're dealing with. Okay, did you know that the CIA, this used to be one of their main methods of interrogation of terrorists, sleep deprivation, till 2009. When the Obama administration took it out with waterboarding. So we can't waterboard and we can't use sleep deprivation for interrogating terrorists anymore. But it's the CIA's, one of their top methods is they keep people awake to interrogate them. It's a well-known across the board, even internationally, method of interrogation is to sleep-deprive people. It's interesting. So this is what we're dealing with. Okay, so back to the circadian rhythms. Where are we going to fit in here? Just practical application here. Where are you going to fit in here? Where are you going to go to bed? You start to get going to bed over in this area over here when the melatonin secretion and you start getting sleepy, rather than, you know, trying to slap yourself awake or taking water, unless you're driving, okay? Maybe you should pull over and sleep. But what we're talking about here is when your body's actually trying to go to sleep, that's not the time to start trying to keep yourself awake. It's time to go to bed and sleep through the night, and I'm going to show you how we can do that if we can cooperate with the way we're intended to operate. We're supposed to be in a horizontal position during these hours of the day. That's the idea behind the human body, okay? So let's look at how can we do this. Enough about the problem. Let's get to the solution, okay? So the first thing we look at is our sleep stages, okay? So we look at basically there's five stages of sleep that we go through each night. We sleep, hopefully. The first stage, some of you are in right now, you're in a light sleep and you're twitching. You're twitching and your head's jerking, okay? That's a light sleep, okay? That makes up about 4 to 5% of our sleep. That's okay. I don't get offended when people sleep in here. If they need to sleep, this is where they should sleep then, okay? You start twitching. We've all been in, and actually some people are actually can operate motorized vehicles in that state right there. Seriously. They're called micro sleeps. You may not even know it. And your spouse says to you, are you listening? This is the sermon on Sabbath morning, stage one, right? How many of you are in stage one? You have insomnia all week long. All you have to do is listen to the preacher, and then and right away you're in stage one, twitching and, you know, drooling and you know, doing that kind of stuff, right? We've all been there. I can remember waking up in class in college with big puddles of drool on my class. Well, what we would do is I was a nutrition major, so we'd have these huge, huge meals, right? And there was 18 girls and me. And because we're dietitians, right? We're going to be dietitians. Well, dietitians in the late 80s were mainly female. I was the only guy in the class, right? And what are college females typically doing? What's their practices? They're dieting, right? And we're having this huge meal. So what am I doing? Yeah, pile it on. I'm going to get big, right? Lift weights, right? And I'd go to the lecture the next hour with all this food in my system, right? And I'd be actually over here. I'd be dreaming. I'd be over into stage 3 and 4, really getting some good Z's there. So here's the cycle we go through. We go through this stage 1, and then we typically go into stage 2, and this is where the breathing pattern and heart rate slows down. This is when you can really tell. Sometimes your spouse, you'll look at them, you think, man, they stopped breathing. Oh, then their chest moves, things like that. That's stage 2. We spend about half of our sleep time in stage 2. Okay, the body temperature's going down. The body is so amazing, it accommodates us to get sleep, to get the rest, get the deep sleep. But really, when we start going over into here, deep sleep begins, brain begins to generate slow delta waves. They've actually hooked up like these EKG machines on the brain. We used to think that sleep was just a nothingness. You go into this nothingness, right? We actually found out when we hooked up the electrodes on the brain and stuff like that, look like an EKG machine. There's all kinds of brain activity. We've seen it with our dogs, right? The next thing we go into, we go into a deep sleep over here, and then we're actually trying to get to the REM sleep where we get the deepest sleep, the most hormones are being released, and the body's rejuvenating itself. That's the dreaming. You see it with your dog, right? The dog down for like 5 minutes, and the next thing they're jerking and they're twitching and stuff like that. They're in REM sleep. But the interesting thing is that you cycle back through this, and usually you don't go back into stage 1. You cycle through and you come back through here. It takes about 90 minutes, okay, the first time. And then as the night goes on and you're getting your good sleep and you're not being distracted and stuff, you keep cycling, and then by the end of the night, you're spending a lot of time over here. That's why right when you're waking up in the morning, you slightly remember, you maybe vividly remember you were dreaming, right? Right before you get up. And sometimes when you go back to sleep, you get right into this deep sleep. So what happens is it starts shortening these stages over here, and you start spending more time over here because that's where the body really wants to be. This is where we really rebuild the body. So the key is how can we get in here more effectively? Does that make sense? Or be in there longer, okay? So let's take a look at it. What it has a lot to do with is this melatonin production cycle. The body naturally produces melatonin, but the interesting thing is you don't store melatonin. You don't have a storage, you don't have any closets to pack it in there. You know what I'm saying? Unfortunately. This is the rejuvenation natural hormone in the body that's produced when the sun's going down and you're in a dark environment. Now, the interesting thing is that if we leave a light on in the hallway, and there's somehow, or even a city light is shining through, that can shut down the amount of melatonin you produce. So you want to sleep in a cave, okay? But I want to do a warning here now. If you stub your toe or something like that, somehow, sometimes it's best to have like a night light back around the corner if you have to get up during the night. Does that make sense? So you would like to, ideally, I've had students that go home and they put cardboard over their windows because they're living in dorm rooms, and then the light under the door, they'll block that out, and their sleep cycle changes totally, and they get better sleep. Okay, so even just blocking out that light can actually get you more melatonin, because really, the amount of melatonin you produce is really going to be reflected in how well you feel when you get up in the morning. Because we've all had nights where we've slept for 8 or 9 hours and we got up and we felt like we never had a wink of sleep. And a lot of it has to do with melatonin. Again, the light and dark cycle. We start producing melatonin when the sun's going down, melatonin's starting to be produced. And then ideally what we would do is get away from bright lights that are shining directly into our eyes as we're getting closer to going to bed. Most of the time you're like me, you work right up till the last second and then you try to lay down and go to sleep. Right? That's typically our pattern. We got to squeeze stuff in, squeeze it in, then shut it off. All right. So, check this out. As we age, we naturally produce less melatonin. Nobody's cheering. Okay? That's one of the side effects. That's why kids get up in the morning and they're ripping through the house at 6 a.m., They've got a full dose of melatonin production going on, and then we start getting into the 30s. You know, I used to always think these studies, when you turn 30, watch out. When you turn 40, watch out, right? I used to think that was a joke, right? And then I turned 30, and then I turned 40, okay? I'm not 50 yet, but I'm knocking on the door, okay? So I'm going over here, and I'm starting to run out of melatonin, so I got to get all the melatonin I can. How many of you have actually taken supplemental melatonin? Do you take it now? Does it help you? Is it working for you? Doesn't work for you. Some it doesn't, some it does. The few times I actually took it, I thought, well, you know, I was into this bodybuilding kick, wanted to get big, you know, so get more melatonin, right? I took it, I was groggy all day long the next day. Have you ever taken too much of it? Okay, so that's something that it's a hormone, okay? It's fairly inexpensive, okay? But if you're going to start taking it, you want to take the smallest dose possible. Okay, and experiment with it. Now, what I have seen is people take melatonin if they wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep. They'll put a little, like these lozenges that you just let them dissolve under your tongue. Sublingual, exactly. And they'll sometimes have those next to their bedstand for the nights that if they go to sleep and then they wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep. Sometimes taking a real small dose of melatonin would actually help them get back to sleep, get some deep sleep. Okay, so the interesting thing is that we don't produce as much of it as we age. Okay, so what about factors? How can we get the most melatonin production naturally within our bodies? Okay, like I said earlier, the body doesn't store it, so you need a daily production. Okay, like dark cycles from the retina travel through the optic nerve, hit that suprachiasmatic nucleus, blah blah blah, and it tells the gland to start and stop it. So when the darkness hits, more melatonin. When the light hits it, shuts it off. That's why it's difficult if you get woken up in the middle of the night and you get a bright light. Try not to get bright light right into the retina. Try to keep it dim. Maybe you could put a cap on or something, walk around, stuff like that. I was just off the cuff there. Probable effects of melatonin. What it does? Protects against free radical damage, which sets the stage for cancer. We know about that. Carcinogens, different things. Prevents or helps or fights tumors. Delays aging, and actually is an immune enhancer. This is all the effects of melatonin, natural melatonin. Okay, assists us with coping with stress, ability to experience pleasure, lowers the cholesterol, lowers risk. This is really if you could really bottle the drug, so to speak, and have a constant fountain of youth, it would be melatonin. It's recharging the body as we sleep. The interesting thing is you have to be in darkness, okay, and horizontal typically, to get the benefits out of this. Okay, now this is the big key. Where is melatonin produced the most? Okay, it's in the brain. But check this out. After darkness, you got a little bit going on during the day. A little bit, little bit, little bit. Darkness shoots up. at about midnight, we start producing it in large quantities. From about midnight till about 4 or 5 a.m. is the target zone that we want to be in, that that REM sleep, is to be in there. So if it takes about 90 minutes to get into REM sleep, okay, so you start working backwards. If midnight, then you start moving an hour and a half back from there, 10:30, 10 o'clock, it should be no consequences there unless you can't control it, but that's where you want to be in the zone of sleeping by 10:30. Does that make sense? Because here's the peak production of melatonin from about, midnight, 1 a.m., so forth, till about 5 a.m., and if you're sleeping and in REM sleep, right there. Now, if you work during the night, you can simulate this by creating a nighttime in your living space. Create a cave during the day in your wherever you sleep. And your body will adjust to this after about 6 to 7 days. So it'd be ideal to stay on that schedule. Now, the interesting thing is that you get more melatonin production if you stay on a regular schedule, too. So try to get on a regular bedtime and a regular time that you get up, even on weekends, okay? Would be ideal to get the greatest production of melatonin. Is this making sense? Is this helping? Any thoughts on this? What are you thinking right now? Yeah. Room temperature can not necessarily affect the melatonin production, but it could affect how well you sleep and how deep a sleep you get in. I'm going to get into what you should have it cooler and not as warm in your room, in your sleeping chamber. You know, the first time I read this, I actually read where Ellen White was talking about having the ions in the air turned over inside the room, and I discovered that, and we were living in North Dakota, and it was wintertime, and it was 28 below. And I was a little bit of a fanatical back then. I took everything as you read it and you just do it right away. So we're going to work, and I cracked the window in the bedroom right before we left. We got home from work that night. My wife and I we had a restaurant then too. We got home and it was just freezing in the bedroom. My wife's like, "What? The furnace go out or what?" No, I said, "No. Here's the council. The room should be open." And she says, "Yeah, but it doesn't say anything about 28 below there." Okay. So it is nice to have the air turned over, exchanged in the sleeping area every day. Okay? In fact, I usually don't say this when there's children around, but it's best not to make your bed. Okay? Air out the bed, at least for a little while. Okay? Kids love to hear that. They can run for that quote, right? Okay. And actually, Ellen White herself said, sleep is worth far more before than after midnight. What was she talking about? Did she know about melatonin? Probably not. She know about circadian rhythms? Probably not. Not in the sense that we know. She probably had deeper insight, right? 2 hours of good sleep before 12 o'clock is worth more than 4 hours after 12 o'clock. And this is where I believe it comes from, the melatonin cycle. You get 2 hours before midnight, you're going to be in that deep sleep cycle when the melatonin starts coming, and you're going to feel more rejuvenated than you were if you're going to sleep 4 hours after midnight. We've all done that. Went to bed late and got up late, and we felt horrible. We've all done it, right? So what do we do? Lifestyle factors. What can we do to help get peak melatonin production? First thing is, obviously, stress is a part of life. Can we learn to manage stress? Can we reduce stress? I don't think we can totally eliminate it, but we're just trying to get it down to the lowest part. Caffeine cuts down on melatonin production in half for 6 hours. That's 250 to 300 milligram consumption of a beverage or a food substance with caffeine in it. So look at that. That's why a lot of times we talk about not drinking caffeine because it'll keep you up at night. I talk about it a lot of times because it's going to cut down on how much melatonin you're going to produce while you're sleeping. Cuts it in half for 6 hours. Excuse me. Alcohol cuts it down by 41%, and tobacco. Those are pretty obvious ones there, pretty easy ones. But we also see that some of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, the NSAIDs, actually reduce the amount of melatonin you're going to produce naturally. The channel blockers, the sleep aids also block you a lot of times from getting into stage 5 of the sleep cycles. It won't allow you to get into that REM deep sleep. So even though you're sleeping, you may not be getting a lot of melatonin production, and you're not getting that deep restorative sleep. So a lot of times people that take the sleep aids, they sleep, but they don't feel rested. And this is part of the reason is you're not getting into the deep sleep, and you're not getting a lot of the melatonin production because it's blocking the production of that. Okay? high doses of B12, antidepressants, actually are messing with the sleep cycle and the brainwave cycle and the melatonin production. Okay, so we try to look at some of the natural ways to do these types of things. And so the habits that increase your exposure to natural light. Get outside in the sunlight during the day. You don't have to, just 15 minutes or 20 minutes will actually be enough to help kick in more melatonin that night. Sleep in complete darkness, we've talked about that. Make it like a cave. Okay, eat foods rich in melatonin, which are a lot of the plant-based foods like oats and corn and so forth. Tryptophan, B6. Avoid the calcium magnesium deficiency. And here's a big one right here that it's becoming very popular right now to eat 6 and 7 times a day and eat late into the night. Did you know that actually when you have food in your system and you go to sleep, what happens a lot of times is your blood glucose level, I don't want to be too technical, but like your blood sugar levels are elevated as you go to sleep, okay, which causes a spike in insulin, which takes the sugar into the cell. Does that make sense? So when we're eating food late at night, what happens is that blocks the release of human growth hormone. High blood sugar levels, high insulin levels from eating late at night actually blocks how much human growth hormone you're going to produce. That's human growth hormone and melatonin help rejuvenate and rebuild the body while you're sleeping. Okay, so when we go to bed with a meal in our stomach, okay, what's going to happen is we're not going to get as good a sleep, and we already know, how many of you have experienced that? You eat late and you don't sleep as well? This is part of the reason, okay? But it's really popular right now to be eating 6 meals a day, and some people even set their alarms and get up and eat at night because they want to keep their blood sugar levels up and stuff like that. That actually is counterproductive to the sleep cycle. Might help you, you know, gain weight if you're a weightlifter or something, but it's actually counterproductive as far as rebuilding and rejuvenating the body. So, synchronized living. That's the circadian rhythms, 24-hour cycle. We also find out, how many of you heard of the circaseptin rhythms? There's a 7-day cycle in the body. How many of you read about this? Transplant patients, what do? They try to reject the organ every 7 days. In the body. Blood pressure, they're actually studying now where they actually see that blood pressure in people has a 7-day cycle as well. And I find this amazing because really all this research is really pointing back to what God put in the Bible in Genesis. Evening and morning the first day, evening and morning the second day. There's the circadian rhythm. And as we study other plants, other animals, we're finding that all of creation has a 24-hour cycle. But we're also standing on an earth that has a 7-day cycle. We're finding now that there's a 7-day cycle in humans, plants, and animals. There's internal 7-day cycles. I think that's exciting. God has built this planet in a 7-day rhythm, in a 24-hour rhythm, and he placed us in it. Why wouldn't we be in a 7-day rhythm, in a 24-hour rhythm? It's just, to me, it points back to the Creator and how he designed us to operate. He placed us on a planet. He set the planet up, and then he put us on it. And so now we are. We're just running in rhythm. When we start observing the Sabbath and the 7-day cycle, yeah, we do that. What about the 24-hour cycle? And I know it's not a commandment that thou shalt keep the circadian rhythms in the body, right? But if we did, if we looked at and looked at the 24-hour cycle as a blessing as much as the Sabbath is, perhaps we would have greater health and greater longevity and greater peace. We put a lot of emphasis on the 7-day cycle because it's a commandment, but when you look at how we're designed to operate and we're going to run in harmony with a 24-hour cycle, we're going to have greater health, greater peace, all the same benefits, I believe, that we see when we do Sabbath observance as well. So what I'm reminding you of is the first book of Genesis really says that this whole we're walking, and if you think about that, the next time that you're observing the Sabbath, that this whole planet is on a 7-day rhythm. It's amazing. And it's also on a 24-hour cycle. So we have the circadian rhythm, the circaseptum rhythm, and we're finding out now, too, that we think that there's actually a circa-annual, there's actually an annual rhythm in the body and in the earth. We think about the seasons and the cycles, and I've been doing some deep, it's hard to find, but I actually think that when you think about when it says in Isaiah that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another, there's something about the 30-day cycle too. We know that ladies ovulate, okay, and a 28-day cycle. I'm trying to tease it out. I'm doing literature search. I'm trying to look at it, and I think there's probably some kind of 30-day rhythm in the body too, and I'm not there yet. It's not out there. But we know that there's a 24-hour, a 7-day, and an annual cycle. And what I'd challenge you to do is look at that in your own life, okay? And try to harmonize your life with the way this earth is spinning and the way the earth is operating, and get in harmony with that, because we're going to have greater health. So, in closing, 10 sleep strategies, 10 things you can do, and a little disclaimer here. Most of the time when I present this to my students or to groups, your sleep gets worse. You know, just like now you're focusing on it, you're over-obsessing with it and things like that. So what I want you to do is not to get, you know, so fanatical about this. Take these things, look at your life, look at your housemates and who you live with and things like that, and try to synchronize these things. Don't make this real rigid, okay? But these are the things that we can do. Top 10 things from all the research I can find is to establish consistent sleep and wake schedules even on weekends. That would be ideal, okay? Now, don't use this to beat up your spouse, okay? Just try to graft this in. Create a regular, relaxing bedtime routine, such as soaking in a hot bathtub or listening to soothing music. Do something to deprogram and relax. Try not to go from one last thing and one last thing, one last thing, and then poof, into bed. Try to drift into bed, okay? As the sun's going down, start thinking about your bedtime ritual, okay? I'm going there soon. I'm getting there real soon now, okay? It's that type of thing. Number 3, create a sleep-conducive environment that is dark, quiet, comfortable, and cool. There it is. Nice, cool environment, okay? Now, it may be difficult if someone else doesn't like it as cool, and those, you just have to work through those things. Number 4, sleep on a comfortable mattress and pillows. Pillows make a huge difference, the type of pillow, okay? Number 5, use your bedroom only for sleep. And try to keep the sleep stealers out of your bedroom, like your iPad and your iPhone and your whatever eye you have, out of your bed, okay? I know my students have a hard time with this. They, like, sleep with their phones, and they're getting woken up all night long, and then they come to my class at 9 in the morning. A lot of fun, okay? So, out of the bedroom, TV. How about pets? Make sure that the pets somehow aren't disturbing your sleep. It'd be ideal if you don't share the bed with your pet. Okay, but, okay, that's a touchy subject. Okay, number 6, finish eating at least 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. I say at least. If you're eating a higher fat, higher volume meal, it's going to take longer to digest. You might want 4 or 5 hours, okay? The last meal of the day, if you're crowding it into the later evening hours, try to be real light with that meal, okay? Number 7, exercise regularly during the day, or at least a few hours before bedtime. Now, how many of you can exercise within a couple hours and then go to bed? Some people can do that. Some people can do that. Not everybody can do that. Regulate your exercise to where it fits for you, and those types of things. Okay? Avoid caffeine, alcohol, tobacco products. Again, these are robbing you of deep sleep. Okay? If you have some sleep issues, keep a sleep log. Write down the patterns, when you last ate your meal, when did you exercise, did you take in any kind of stimulant that day, that type of thing. And the last thing is learn to value sleep. I don't think we value sleep enough. That's probably should have been number 1. Number 1 is learn to value sleep. Put your value on sleep, and it's going to revolutionize your life. For those that don't sleep well, you know what I'm talking about. Okay? And again, there's the National Sleep Foundation. I think it's sleepfoundation.org. Great stuff on there. Some other resources there. But those are some of the things. Now, the one last thing, sometimes this is a quick, easy fix. Some people are magnesium deficient, all right? And you find magnesium in all your fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains and things like that. I mean, sometimes we process them too much, or we're washing them off too much and things like that. So what I'd recommend that you do is possibly, how many of you ever tried this Calm? It's called Calm right over here. It's just a magnesium, I think, oxide supplement. Just a little bit of that. See, what calcium does is calcium helps with muscle contraction, and magnesium helps with muscle relaxation. And some of us, as we go to bed and we're so tense, we might not even realize this, but we're so tense that the muscles aren't relaxing, so we can't actually go to sleep. And so sometimes a small amount of this calcium supplement called Calm can actually help you relax and actually get to sleep more efficiently. So, what did I say? Calcium. Okay, yeah, it's a magnesium supplement. Sorry, thank you. Yeah, so you want a little bit of magnesium. Okay? So we're locked up here. So, in closing, any questions, comments? Excellent idea. She's talking about that possibly if you're going to bed and it's still light out. Some of you live where it's light, stays light longer. Wearing a little mask like people wear on the airplanes can help sometimes block out that direct light that's coming into the body. Yeah. Moonlight. Moonlight's the same thing. Any kind of light that's coming through your window that may hit the retina, even when it's closed, can actually upset the sleep cycle. Yeah. Yes. Yes, melatonin, and when you're traveling through time zones, okay, it'd be ideal if you could start sleeping like the time zone you're going to go to ahead of time, if you could a day or two ahead of time, and then possibly taking the melatonin when it's time to go to bed when you get there. Small amounts to always, whenever you try to start taking melatonin, when you're taking, just take it as smallest amount as possible. Otherwise, you may sleep too deep, and you're still kind of groggy when you're coming out of that, okay? You can comment. B6 intake. Is as far as a supplement? That's really, if I can, I would like to see you do it in whole plant foods like that. And if you're going to do a supplement, rather than doing individual nutrients, vitamins, and minerals, what I'd like to see somebody do a broad-based multivitamin. And I prefer to see it do a liquid multivitamin for better absorption. And you don't need to take a large dose. Does that make sense? Small amount, and the B vitamins will be in the multivitamin from a whole food base. Exactly. Comment over here.
Yes, would chocolate have the same detrimental effect as far as the melatonin?
Not real sure. If chocolate has the same effect as coffee and so forth. It mimics caffeine and so forth. It's not exactly caffeine, and it mimics it a little bit. I'm not sure how it affects. I can't say for sure how the effect would be in the back here.
What about having a constant, like a fan,
going? Okay, if it's something, the thing is don't go home and change a lot of stuff, you know what I mean? Because it may mess you up more than what you were doing. Does that make sense? So make small changes. If you have a fan going and you're doing okay with it, and if you sleep with a partner, then I would say keep it. I don't think that's going to affect the melatonin production. Pardon me? Yeah, exactly. Comment in the back? See, I don't know exactly what time would be the best time. Some people like to take their vitamins at night, because I think there's greater absorption there. Okay? So I can't give a specific recommendation of exactly when you should take a multivitamin. But if it has magnesium in it and you're having difficulty falling asleep, then maybe you want to take your magnesium supplement just prior to going to bed with the multivitamin. Might work well. I believe oats, corn, pumpkin seeds. This is for melatonin, actually naturally occurring in the foods. Oats, pumpkin seeds, corn. I'm kind of blocking out right now some other ones. Comment in the back. Pillows? Find one that works well for you that doesn't keep your neck in too much of an elevated position. So you have more of a spine that's kind of more horizontal. So you don't want to have several of them. Okay? So sometimes people like the hollowed out pillows where their neck is cradled and then the head actually dips in there. You ever seen those? They're kind of hollowed out a little bit. But experiment with the pillows. Okay, but I would say typically you don't want to be stacking too many on top of each other. It would be ideal. One more question then. I'm going to hang around, so if you have other questions or thoughts, I'll talk to you individually. Comment here. Now, only if it startles you and wakes you up. I remember when I was living with a high school buddy of mine. We lived right by a railroad track. The first week, I heard it every night, and after about a week, my body seemed to block it out and adjust just fine. Okay? Do you have a comment? Daytime naps. What you want to do is keep them short and not too close to bedtime. So talking about naps. Okay? I wanted to close with one more scripture, because I want to remember that we're really talking about holistic health here, and we're talking about all different elements of health. And Jesus said in Matthew 11:28, you know the scripture? Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And he says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for where? Your souls. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. I don't want to leave off the spiritual dimension of sleep, because really a lot of times what we're looking for is we really need some soul rest. We can do the physical rest, and that helps with the spiritual, but really what we need to do too is include that spiritual dimension with our rest, because Jesus says, come unto me, and I'm going to give you the true soul rest. Okay, so we can practice these in harmony with the soul rest. Okay, I'm going to hang around afterwards. Let's close with prayer. Father, we thank you that you've fearfully and wonderfully made our bodies. You've designed us in such a magnificent way. And you've placed us on this planet that's running on a 24-hour and a 7-day cycle. And Father, I pray that we can harmonize our lives. We pray that these principles can be applied to our lives, and that truly we can have the soul rest and the physical rest that you promise. In Jesus' name, amen.